Hello, welcome back to Back in My Play. We got back so fast because we are driving a Ferrari Testarossa in Outrun. This is Outrun, the game that we've been talking about for years doing on this show. And now the time has finally arrived to talk about this incredible arcade racer. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and for this episode, you know, I just thought, why even make a change? Because he came on at a random night to just talk about some games, talk about Everdrives. Might as well get this guy back on the show. And it's a Sega game, so I'm contractually obligated to talk to Greg Seward. Greg, how you doing?
Great. I love talking about Sega games. Let's talk about them.
Well, this is a Sega game. It's Outrun. Have you heard of it?
This is the Sega game.
This is a game that has... I don't even know what I became a fan of it just when I picked up one of the arcade machines randomly. I never really played it growing up.
How does one pick up an arcade machine randomly?
Well, once you buy two arcade machines, you want three arcade machines, and you look on Craigslist and you type in arcade, and then you find someone that has an Outrun arcade machine in Rhode Island. But I'm going to save all this stuff
for the
other segment. But just a couple quick notes. First off, thank you to everyone. We're really close to the $100 per episode amount at patreon.com/backinmyplay. It does mean a lot if you do jump on there to support the show. You know, there's no way going to affect how many episodes get done or anything like that. But it does make a difference when it comes to, you know, paying for the shows to get downloaded and stuff. Like, this isn't free, and I like to use my great web host, as they have been working well for 9 years of the Fitcast. So I like to stick with them for Back in My Play. Also, I was on the Nintendo World Report with Alex from the Nintendo World Report to talk about a bunch of Nintendo stuff, including like new Mario Kart. Also talked about a lot of virtual console stuff and issues that are going on with that service. Plus, they're getting new games. Obviously, they're getting Nintendo 64 stuff now, so great stuff over there. Just want to mention those two things real quick. We're going to take a break, and for this episode, you're going to be hearing some of the arranged tracks from the Sega Ages version of Outrun for the Sega Saturn, because I played a lot of the other just regular arcade tracks, original arcade tracks from Outrun before in the past. So now you're going to hear the special arranged versions that they made for the Sega Ages disc. So stick around. We'll be right back with the history of Outrun. This is going to be a really fun segment because Outrun might be the most ported game that we've ever talked about on the show, and maybe the most ported Sega game of all time. And I know, like, Sonic the Hedgehog got even ported to iPod videos. So, like, the video iPod, like, not even – it had a dial on it and a center button. That's all it had. So I got a lot of great history for you. First off, it came out in the arcade September 20th, 1986, and then the next release would be the Master System June 30th, 1987, and then it would hit the Mega Drive in 1991. It was obviously published by Sega. Of course, it was produced by Yu Suzuki, who would then go on to create an incredible library of fantastic video games, including Shenmue, which... we can still dream about Shenmue 3 on this podcast. And Shenmue 2 is actually going to be coming up later in this show because it is somehow back related to Outrun, the Sega Ages version, believe it or not. So, Hiroshi Kawaguchi was the composer and did the music for the arcade version of Outrun. And as we talked about many times in the past, just iconic music, just an incredible soundtrack. and the incredible feeling that those tracks give you while driving that car is quite impressive. So before we get into all the ports, just some quick stats about the game. Like I mentioned before, the Ferrari Testarossa was the car that you were going to be driving, a beautiful red Ferrari that you and some blonde are just jumping into to go on a really fast trip. And the big deal with this game, like graphically, was not only like 3D looking cars, but also the game had hills. So you would actually go up hills, and then you would not be able to see what is over the hill, so you could kind of run into traffic issues. And this is going against, like someone mentioned on Twitter, like, what's the difference between this and Rad Racer? There it is. It's right there, where Rad Racer did not have hills. It was basically like, if you think of a car that's on a piece of paper that you just put on top of a piece of paper, the car is always facing forward and you're just kind of moving the piece of paper back and forth. And Greg, you probably remember those toys that they weren't video games, but it was like this car that was on like a track that was kind of a roll of paper.
Yeah, I mean, actually, what you're describing anyway is
exactly
what arcades were before digital games were around.
Sure, sure. I'm not that old, Greg, so...
I am.
So the other cool option was that you got to choose your your soundtrack for the game before you got started. Once you threw in that quarter, you got to choose what song you were going to be driving to, what was going to be on the stereo of that Ferrari. And it's nonlinear, so you're able to choose your course throughout the game, and it's about maybe 5 minutes long. It's actually like almost less than that. I can look at some of my high scores in between the break, but as you go through, if you choose left, you're going to get an easier path. As you go right, you're going to get a harder path with more traffic and harder turns, more obstacles. And sometimes it could just be, the environment just makes it a little bit harder to see where you're going. Like I said, hills can be a real pain in the ass. The arcade hardware is something that I'm going to talk about in the next segment. But now, Sega ran on a specific board that they made for it. It was like a souped-up version of the board that was used on a lot of different Sega games in the arcades. And Outrun achieved its 3D effects using a sprite scaling technique called Super Scaler technology, first used 1 year earlier in Hang-On and in Space Harrier. This allowed a large number of scaled sprites to be displayed on the screen at the same time. Like the Sega Space Harrier games, the pseudo 3D sprite tile scaling in Outrun was handled in a similar manner to textures in later texture mapped polygonal 3D games of the 1990s, just showing you how really advanced this game was in 1986. Also, with the cabinets themselves, the steering wheels had force feedback, so if you crashed, it was actually a thing that would vibrate, or it would actually kind of like spin inside the steering mechanism to create a shaking effect of the steering wheel, which would make it literally hard to hold on to that thing. Also, you had your standard high-low shift, and there was a bunch of different versions of this arcade machine, all the way up to a cockpit version that moved around as you made turns. So it was literally like an incredibly immersive experience, all the way down to the mini version of the Outrun cabinet that was a stand-up, which is literally the most desirable one today because of how heavy those Outrun standard cabinets, the stand-ups, are.
Really?
They're super heavy. Like, they're,
I didn't know that.
Maybe like 40% heavier than like a regular, whether it be like a Midway, whatever 1980s arcade machine. Like, they're just, because there's metal in them. There's so much metal in the base of that Outrun machine, where most arcade machines are just plywood and a monitor. Huh. There's lots of metal in the steering mechanics and in the actual base of the thing that you step on itself. You got to think about the pedals. There's lots of metal in it. I just want to quickly mention, in terms of the music, the game's accompanying music was composed by Hiroshi Kawaguchi, like I mentioned before, who had previously composed soundtracks for other Yu Suzuki-designed games and was part of Sega's official band at the time, the SST Band. Outrun was the first video arcade game that allowed the user to choose the background music, a soundtrack of both laid-back beach music, very similar in style to the tone of the popular 70s and 80s Japanese jazz fusion band Cassiopeia, and some Miami Sound Machine style Latin Caribbean beats. Three selectable tracks were featured in all and were broadcast through imaginary FM radio stations received by the radio receiver in the Tesserosa. The three tracks were titled Passing Breeze, Splash Wave, and the best one, Magical Sound Shower.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where things get a little nuts, because it was a big deal back then to, you know, get that arcade experience in the house. We saw that with the 2600. We saw it with a ColecoVision, a television, all that stuff. And this is – okay, I'm going to say all the ports for this game right now. You have the Sega Master System, which was big. And then they also redid – they made another version for the Sega Master System titled Outrun 3D, which actually supported 3D glasses, which there was a couple games on the Mega Drive that did that, right?
Yeah. Not the Mega Drive, the Master System.
That's what I meant. Yeah. I'm already in Japan. It came out in the Commodore 64 in 87, the Amstrad CPC in 87, the Sinclair ZX Spectrum in 87, MSX and MSX2 in 87 and 88, respectively, the Commodore Amiga in 88, the Amiga in 89, Atari ST in 89, PC DOS in 89, the NEC PC Engine in 1990, which was ported by NEC themselves, which is an outstanding version. It's really an outstanding version of Outrun on a home console. I think it's really close to the Sega Genesis Mega Drive, and in some senses, it's even better. It just runs so well. Huh. Look up a video of it. It's really, really great, or if you can pull it up on something. And the cart is not super expensive, or I guess the card. Then it came finally to the Mega Drive and Sega Genesis in 1990, went to the Sega Game Gear in 1991, and then the Sega Saturn and the Sega Ages Collection, where it was ported by Rutubo Games, which did a lot of port work for Sega. They actually even ported Shenmue 2 to the Xbox. There you go.
I didn't know that.
That's the callback from earlier. I came to mobile phones in 2004, the PlayStation 2 in 2006, and Sega Ages Volume 13, which was a remake of the arcade version, which is probably not one you're going to want to check out. It was also inside Shenmue 2 on the Dreamcast in 2001, also in this great... Oh, do you have a copy of this? The Yu Suzuki Gameworks Volume 1?
I don't. Wish I did.
Yeah, that thing is super cool. It only came out in Japan for the Dreamcast. But again, it's like, think very much like Sega Ages with just like a bunch of literature with it. It came to the Game Boy Advance as part of Sega Arcade Gallery compilation in 2003. Then it came to the Xbox inside Shenmue 2, as I mentioned before, ported by Rutubo Games that did the Sega Saturn, Sega Ages version. And it also came to the Xbox in the form as part of Outrun 2 in 2004. And then finally, probably, you know, one of the two best versions outside of the arcade version is the 3DS version, which mm-hmm. was ported by M2 in 2014. We finally got in 2015 here in the States with added 3D effect. It had two new soundtrack tracks in it. And it was also released in that Sega 3D collection that I mentioned before. The cart is actually on sale on Amazon Japan right now for like $8 if you really want to pick up a copy of that. So that's a ton of ports, man. That's like Donkey Kong levels of ports. Like, that's the only other game, like arcade game, I can think of is like Donkey Kong, and I don't know, maybe Mario Brothers had a lot of ports too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of old Sega games did as well, but I'll tell you, like, I'm without even looking it up, I'm guessing those microcomputer ports were probably not all that great.
Like Mortal Kombat on DOS.
Yeah, just not even DOS. I'm just talking like the Sinclair Spectrum and all that stuff, just because those systems weren't powerful enough.
But US Gold did a ton of those ports too, and that is not really a sign of quality. They made a lot of terrible Genesis games too. Or at least they published a lot of terrible.
They have if I'm not mistaken, they actually have a connection to Sega. I think that somebody who used to work at Sega ended up running US Gold.
Yeah, I think that's actually in Console Wars.
Yes, it is. That's where I remember reading it.
Yep. Yeah. Blake Harris, who will eventually be on to talk about some Toe Jam and Earl. So,
I hear he likes Toe Jam and Earl.
He does. I played some the other night, and We'll figure that one out. All right, so that's it for the history of this game. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with our personal memories and history of this game. So stick around. Here's some more awesome tracks from the Arranged soundtrack for the Sega Ages version on the Sega Saturn. We're traveling back to 1986. You know, I might have been born. Actually, I would have been born at this point.
Were you alive?
I'm alive. I'm just not aware.
You're not aware of Outrun yet? This is pre-Outrun for you?
This is pre-Outrun.
P-O-R?
Yep. And so I will go quickly, and then I'm going to let you talk about this because – and then I'll kind of jump into like 2010 or 2012, I guess it would be. And my only experience with Outrun was, you know, that one time at the arcade when I got to actually go into one of the sit-down cabinets at the it's at Disney's I just had the name in my head. So Downtown Disney had this thing that used to be a gigantic arcade. Like, it was multiple levels, and it had like every arcade game in it, everything from like
something Quest.
Yeah, you're right. Like, oh, man.
Might just be Disney Quest, actually.
Yeah, actually, it is Disney Quest. So you would have, like, everything from VR all the way back down to, like, Star Wars from Atari.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
awesome.
That's where I played a lot of that, and I played a lot of 18-wheel trucker.
Nice.
But they had the actual Outrun machine that moved side to side, and I had never seen one of those in the United States. I think those are mostly exclusive to Japan. Like, I've seen in Game Center CX, whenever he goes to game centers, like the old game centers that are almost like museums, those pop up a lot.
Yeah, they were around. I saw a few of them in my youth.
It's just tough. They obviously, with all the pistons in the thing, like, it's going to break down. Like, there's lots of moving parts in those things. They're really, really expensive. And I'm guessing it was not cheap to get those in the arcade, but it was a novelty. You got to, you know, have something that moved around. It really brought you into the experience.
That was kind of Sega's thing back in the day, right? I mean, like, if you look at some of their their deluxe cabinets were just crazy.
Afterburner,
like,
Terminator 2.
Exactly. Like, even Space Harrier had a crazy cabinet. And then, of course, you get, like, the R360 that they did. And then when you got to, like, virtual racing, they had the big sit-down with the airbags in it so that it would simulate the G-forces when you turned.
Even Virtual On, where you got to, like, have those side-by-side cabinets and, like, Daytona, like, everything. I mean, Sega's arcade games always had something that, you know, made you, oh, man, maybe it's worth that 50 cents. Like, I know it's like I only got a dollar. I could play four games, or I could play this for 50 cents and just get to do something really, really cool.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna let you. I'm gonna let you talk because did you play this a lot when you're?
Oh, hell yeah! This was a favorite. I mean, I didn't get to go to a lot of arcades when I was a kid. Although, we had right above Nova Scotia. There's a little island called Prince Edward Island. It's actually a province, but it's tiny. And it used to be, when I was a kid, that the only way you could get there was by ferry. And we would go there multiple times in the summer for races and things like that. And so we always sort of – my brother and I always sort of prayed that we would get on – we just called it the big boat. There were like three or four ferries in service, but there was one really big one. Mm-hmm. And it had this kick-ass arcade in it. Like, it had like the big deluxe Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and all that stuff in the arcade. But it had Outrun. It didn't have the big deluxe sit-down Outrun, but it did have Outrun. And that was like – one of the games that I would spend the money that our dad would give us for the arcade. Like, it would all go into Outrun and like Iron Man Stewart's Off-Road Racing for me. But we used to go down to Old Orchard Beach, which I think is in Maine. Like every summer, that was like our vacation, was to drive down to Maine. And that place had a kick-ass arcade as well. And it had like all the deluxe Sega machines. And the first time I saw the deluxe Outrun machine, I was just like, I was in love. Like, it's a beautiful machine. It's got like the wheels in the back and the four exhaust ports and the lights. And it's got like two speakers up by your head where you're sitting in the, and like the thing about Sega's old arcade, the deluxe arcade cabinets too, is that like the monitors were sort of molded into the whole sort of design. They weren't like sitting in front of it or anything like that. So you sit down and you're driving. Yeah. Like if you turn left, the whole thing shifts right. And it just was like an experience like nothing else. I mean, I loved Outrun in the arcade.
Yeah, they in terms of like the bezels that they use, they made it look like the monitor wasn't really there. Like the monitor kind of like floated there, and you just felt like you were. It was just a much different look than what you got from a lot of arcade machines that would just have like a black piece of, you know, construction paper outside of the monitor for the bezel. And it's an, even like the stand-ups, like there are fantastic looking cabinets. Like the side art is really, really nice. The care that they put into everything, from like the Ferrari logo, the decal in the center of the steering wheel, to the gear shift mechanics, to the pedals, to, like I said, those cabinets had a lot of metal in them. So it wasn't just like cheap plywood. Like, it just was a really high quality machine.
Yeah, and I mean, the cool thing about that was, is like, I mean, Sega made a lot of good arcade games, although they really, I think, really started to pick up in the mid-80s through the 90s. They were, you know, they made great arcade games, and Yu Suzuki has a lot to do with that. But for me, like, the Super Scalar games defined Sega, right? Because that was just the era that I was going to arcades. So, like, you know, those were Sega games, like Space Harrier and Afterburner and Outrun and Hang On. So, like, the other cool thing was that was also kind of the beginning of the, it seemed like sort of a tech race between them and Namco that went right up to pretty much like the basically the death of arcades. Like, they did 3D Fighters at the same time. They did Polygon Racers at the same time. Like, and Namco was starting to get into the sort of this sort of like crazy sprite scaling 3D games as well, I think, in the late 80s. So there was kind of like this arms race going on between Sega and Namco even then. But yeah, these games defined Sega for me when I was a kid.
It's I'm going to tell a tragic story for people, and this isn't like back in 1980s, but I even sent Greg this video today.
Yeah, I'm still reeling.
I got some nasty comments that I had to delete on that YouTube video, but so I've mentioned this in the past on the show, so I apologize before, but I've gone through 4 Outrun machines in my arcade owning history. It was actually the 3rd machine I ever bought was an Outrun machine that I drove down to Rhode Island for, and had to, you know, with this guy who was not in very good shape, try to lift it out of a basement. Like, we had to take it out the back steps out of the basement, which was super steep because there wasn't really a lot of depth. It was just really, you know, you had to go up high really fast. So with a machine that is that high, and, you know, agreeing to get the bottom because I'm kind of buying this thing and I want to make sure that it doesn't get destroyed on the way up, it's a tiring process. I ended up getting it into my car, brought it back to my parents' house because it was one of the what would then be 5 arcade machines that would be into my like first apartment that I'd be moving into, along with Area 51 with a Maximum Force combo hard drive.
Not bad.
NFL Blitz, NBA Showtime combo, a PlayChoice 10, and basically what is more or less, it's like this special board that they sell that you can hook up to arcade hardware, or you can hook it up to like a VGA monitor, and it has a JAMA connector, which is the standardized arcade connector hookups. So you could have like 2,000 games on this board, and would just load it up as like a Pentium 4, like a souped up Pentium 4 motherboard with arcade hardware like hacked onto it.
Nice.
So I had a really great lineup, but you know, arcade machines, like you kind of get bored of them fast, and you always want to rotate them out. That's why arcades always did that too. So I eventually ended up selling that Outrun, and then I moved into a different place where I am actually right now. And I was like, oh man, now that I sold all my arcade machines, I had to move. So I'm moving to this new place. Maybe I'll kind of see what's around. And the first thing that I picked up was Ms. Pac-Man that was in like perfect shape. It was awesome, great. And then I saw an Outrun that popped out, but it was a Turbo Outrun. So, you know, again, making a long trek, it is literally Turbo Outrun as sold as an upgrade kit to an Outrun arcade machine.
Really?
The only difference is that there's a turbo button, which would actually be the player one start button on the left-hand side if you're looking at Outrun arcade machine. So I picked that up and I'm like, oh, it's Turbo Outrun. Like, I know I can always reconvert this back to an Outrun if I want to. But finding the actual, you know, ROM chips to be able to do it is actually rather expensive. And it's hard to find working chips because those boards are incredibly fragile when compared to like any other arcade machine board made at that time. It's a really big board. It's actually mounted usually to the back door of it, so it would swing open a lot, and they're just notorious for being really fragile boards. So I picked up that Turbo Outrun, and there was a couple things wrong with it because that shaking mechanism really messes up the gears inside the Outrun steering like chassis or whatever, to the point where there are people out there that make these like new, they made new molds to make these replacement gears because this is one gear that's notorious for cracking and breaking down to the point where you can't make accurate turns anymore. So it is like a 3-hour process to open up that gear assembly to replace it and then, you know, pray to God that you can put it back together again. So anyways, I got it real deep with that. And then I'm like, I like Turbo Outrun, but I want an Outrun machine. So I bought another Outrun machine, and I bought it knowing that it had a messed up board, but I thought I could take those ROM chips from that board and put it onto my Turbo Outrun board to then get at least Outrun, like one good working board. I just wanted one good working board. I can always swap out the ROMs, like 18 ROMs or whatever, I can do it. So I do that, and you know, I go and check it out, and the thing is just a mess. The power supply is all messed up. You know, the monitor is just has tons of burn in, like it was in really bad shape. So I ended up dealing it down. I got it for like $100 or whatever and brought it back. And then I still wasn't happy because I'm like, I still want, like, I want a good Outrun machine. Like still with these two cabinets, like I might be able to make one really good one, but I still want like another Outrun cabinet. So I ended up buying a third Outrun machine. And then I took the parts from that third Outrun machine because again, bad board, but you know, maybe if I can get all this stuff working together, I can get two good machines. So I took the monitor out of the third one, put it into the second one, sold the monitor from the second one to someone else who, you know, wanted it because it's still a pretty standard. So I think it's I think it's 19-inch monitor. So got rid of that. And then I went and took the steering mechanism out of the first one, which was like completely shot. I wasn't going to like replace the gears. It was never going to happen. So I took that steering assembly out, got rid of it. I literally threw it in the trash because it was a mess. Like the decal was ripped off. The rubber was torn off of the steering wheel. And in the power cord, it wasn't correctly grounded. Like there was a loose, like the ground was loose in the power cord. So I would always get shocked through the steering wheel. So I mean, that's an easy fix. You can just replace the, you know, the three-prong adapter at the end. But so anyways, I swapped that out. I got new like Repro Ferrari decals for this thing. And after swapping out what I swapped the monitor, the gear assembly, I took the shifting assembly because one was really loose and one was still firm. Like it would just kind of slide back and forth and wouldn't stay locked in place. So I had one that was really, really good. And at the end of the day, I had two like really nice machines, and then I had this one machine that was just like a carcass left over. So I did my best. I spent like 2 weeks trying to give it away for free on, you know, Clav, which is like an arcade forum, and also this local arcade forum. No one wanted it. So after having, I couldn't like just have an extra carcass in my house. I don't have a basement. So I took a sledgehammer to it and threw it in a dumpster. And I actually, but I did give, I saved one whole side of side art and I gave that to a buddy of mine who it's now in his school that he teaches at. He has a whole, he just has the side of an outrun machine in his computer science class, which is still pretty dope.
Just so hell of it.
It, you know, it went to a rather good cause, but that's just a word of warning. If you are thinking about getting an outrun machine, those things suck. They are heavy and they break super easily. So, and they have tons of burn in. Like, I mean, now at this point, you're going to be lucky to find a monitor that's not just doesn't have, you know, a ton of bad stuff going on. So keep that in mind. And we're going to talk about two arcade perfect ways to play this game in the next segment that are much more viable alternatives, and it will make sure that you can have the foot space in your house to do other cool stuff. So that's my Outrun rant.
That was a long one.
I mean, it's hundreds of dollars. And those Outrun machines are now in good homes, but they're not in mine. And I'm okay with that. Although I did get a little bit of an itch after playing this game the last couple days. I'm like, man, I just want to find one of the cabarets, which is the mini one of Outrun, like the mini Outrun cabarets, which are way lighter, still the same size monitor. It just doesn't have so much, you know, weight to it,
right,
or height or width. It's just really compact and narrow. Like cabaret cabinets are kick ass. So that's, I don't know. Did you ever play any of the ports very much? Did you like pick this up on the Genesis?
Oh, I had I still have the Genesis version. I still play it once in a while, actually.
What do you think of it?
when I was a kid, should we talk about this on the show, or?
Well, did you play it? Did you play it for the show?
Yeah, I've played it recently. I didn't play it this week, but I played it like a couple weeks ago. I streamed
about
it.
No, I'm more interested in like what you know think about it.
When I was a kid, I loved it. I thought it was a pretty good port.
Yeah.
Playing it now, it's kind of rough. You know, like not having any car noises or anything like that. But yeah. It's still a pretty respectable port considering. Although it's funny because. Having spent a fair amount of time with Afterburner for the show,
mm-hmm.
which came out like over a year before Outrun came out on the Mega Drive, Afterburner is a much better port. It's way better than Outrun.
Yeah, I don't
like
know.
Just from a technical standpoint.
It just seems like a bad port.
It's not great. It gets the job done, but it's not great.
And the Genesis sound hardware just does not do the job at all.
I mean, it's, yeah, it sounds like Genesis music. It's all right. It
sounds like bad Genesis music.
Aww.
I'm going to be real. Like, I defend the Genesis music sound hardware more than anyone, but, like, I even have a brand new looking Mega Drive version of that game that I will never get rid of just because of how awesome the, you know, the game looks and the box art. But, I booted it up and it's not super, like, I swear to God, try out the PC Engine TurboGrafx version. It's actually more
enjoyable.
I'll have
to try that.
It's really, really good. Did you ever touch the Game Gear version?
No, but I will be soon.
Because that's, I mean, obviously, same as the, or very similar, at least, into the Master System version. But it looks like they were done by different port companies. The Game Gear version was ported by Sims, where the Master System version was done by Sega. So,
yeah. And Hertz did the Mega Drive one, right?
Correct.
Which I think I just covered a game. I think I just covered the first game they ever did on the Mega Drive. I forget which one it was. It was in the most recent episode, I think.
It's a bummer they didn't, you know, take the time to actually do this game justice. Like I said, go check out the PC Engine version. It kicks ass. And the soundtrack's really good. It's like really good 8-bit version of Outrun, and it runs great, and you don't lose any sound. Like, you can still hear the screeching of the tires and stuff. It's good stuff.
Check it out.
NEC, man, go figure. They know how to make great games. What do you think? You want to take a break? We'll come back to the future.
Oh, I'm good.
All right, we made it back all the way to 2015, and OutRun is still a fantastic game, believe it or not. It is coming out on the latest consoles. Like I mentioned before, it just came out on the Nintendo 3DS in the 3D remake series that Sega has been putting out. M2 just does an incredible job with these ports, and this is no different. It allows for tons of customization, and if you have any interest in this game whatsoever, get on your 3DS and drop the $6 on this game. It is the best $6 that you could spend on the eShop. But I also played around with the Sega Ages version, which I played a ton of, and it is also another viable option if you have a Sega Saturn. And don't worry, it actually also came out in America in a much more economical version, you know, like a collection of the Sega Ages games on one disc, which that's one of the times where the U.S. totally won.
Except you don't get the Rage soundtrack.
Well, I mean, outside of that, you're getting all the Sega Ages or a bunch of the Sega Ages games on one disc, where OutRun for the Sega Ages version for the Saturn was a full retail release. It's on the disc by itself in Japan, which I'm sure, you know, I don't know if you can tell how much it was burned onto the disc, but I'm sure it didn't really use up much of it. So how did you play it? Because I would like to, I want to definitely talk about both versions, the 3DS version, which is just really great. And then also you got to give the Sega Ages version its due, because sometimes you don't want to play OutRun on like a 4-inch screen. It's nice to have it up on a 55-inch screen, upscaled through a Framemeister with RGB.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, I play both this week, but tonight, just before the show, I was really spending a lot more time with the Saturn version of the Japanese Sega Ages release. And you're right. I mean, like, the 3DS version is awesome, and I love having that in a console that I carry in my bag all the time. So, like, you know, if I have a few minutes and I want to kill some time, like 5 minutes or something like that, you can fire it up and get a really great experience. But there's nothing like having it, you know, booming through a sound system and up on a big screen. It's there's nothing else like it.
Yeah. At the same time, you can use your headphone amplifier and plug in a good set of headphones.
Because here we go.
You have to use the amplifier. I just charge up my amps for my Tokyo trip. But you got to have those headphone amplifiers for that 3DS, man. They still just have like a 20-cent headphone amp on that thing. But let's focus on the Sega Ages version for right now, because like I said, it came out in 1996 in Japan, and that's Japan. You have the ability to put out these Sega Ages games, and they also did, you know, games like Afterburner 2, like Fantasy Zone, and its own retail disc. And they also did a bunch of other stuff. I know they did Fantasy Star, they did Galaxy Force 2. They had a bunch of awesome, you know, games that came out in this series on the Sega Saturn. As like, think about paying like $40 or $50 for OutRun 2 or OutRun, even though it's arcade perfect, on your, you know, and I guess in like 1996, we're getting awesome, like Twisted Metal 2, we're getting Resident Evil 2, or you could play a 10-year-old game.
But don't forget though, too. I mean, some of those games you mentioned, yeah, whatever. But some of them were huge hits in the arcade, and there was no way to get an arcade perfect version of it up until that point. Like, you know, that was 10 years after OutRun came out in the arcade. And there have been like 2 dozen ports, but none of them were arcade perfect. Most of them didn't even come close.
No.
I mean, you know, it's there's the novelty there. And of course, you're in Japan, like you said, and also the Saturn was quite popular in Japan. So, you know, there was obviously a market for that. But I mean, they never could have done that here. Not in 96. They just weren't popular enough.
And it is relatively inexpensive. You can probably get it for under $30, maybe $40. If you're in Japan, eBay, you're going to be going into the upper 40s for a nice copy of OutRun Sega Ages. I was lucky enough to find it in Tokyo, and it's just like a really nice collection. The instructions came out really nice, and it sounds like a stupid to talk about aesthetics, but it just is a really nice package, and it's something that I wish more companies could do today. But not really economically feasible to do that. And it also supported the Sega Saturn driving. It wasn't even like a steering wheel. It was like a, Remember yeah. that thing? Like it had two handles on it? Okay.
Yeah, it looked like an open wheel steering, an old school open wheel steering wheel, like an F1 style steering wheel, but it had an extremely short base on it, and it had these two little area at the bottom where you're basically supposed to sit and put the thing between your legs. You're supposed to pin it down with your legs and drive that way. Yeah, that's how that thing's built.
I remember maybe it was for the Xbox 360. I think that had something similar too, like you put it on your thighs or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, so you know, along with this, they gave you a bunch of dip switch options in the options menu, which allow you to change enemy difficulty, you know, how you wanted to do the time limit, what game mode, and even offered overseas mode. Or the Japanese version. So there's a couple small differences in between those two. And you got to have that music test. You have your sound test, and you also have the ability to change between that arranged version and the original arcade soundtrack in Sega Ages Outrun.
And I think with the overseas in Japan version, the major difference is the track layout. Right, because I mean Outrun. I mean, we haven't really explained it because I think we're assuming everyone's played Outrun. But the whole idea with Outrun, where you get to choose the different directions you go, like each area's got a very distinctive look, and yeah, the layout's different from Japan to the U.S. I don't know why. I don't know why you would ever do that, but maybe they thought that the difficulty ramped differently. I also love you talking about the packaging. I'm looking at it here because you have it on the Google Doc, and I didn't remember this, but I love that they actually have the background music tracks listed right on the front cover.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it's great. I love that.
I mean, you can get, like we talked about before in the show, there's an 11-disc Outrun set that covers the whole series up until 2006. Like, it's not...
So cool.
And it's not even a joke. Like, I'm looking at it right now, and it has, like, it's literally split up. It has the soundtrack for everything from the arcade to the Mega Drive. They have the Game Gear version. They have the Master System version. They have versions that were done on PCs. They have, you know, the Outrun 2006. They have Outrun 2. They have Outrun tracks from a version that they did in 94. They have just so many great tracks. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take a little audible, and I'm going to use the Euro mix of Magical Sound Shower to finish up the show today, because I just think it's like I can listen to that Euro version all day. So you have 15 total locations in the game, starting at Coconut Beach. You go to Wheatfield, Cloudy Mountain, the desert, the old capital, Death Valley, the Alps, Big Gate, Stonehill, the Walls, which is basically just a large cliff on your right-hand side. Think your Grand Canyon, Seaside Tower, Dualway, Wilderness, the Vineyard, and Lakeside. And if you actually check out the Game Gear version, there's different locations in the Game Gear version compared to the arcade and, you know, all the other versions.
I'm assuming the Big Gate is the one with the big stone arches, and that's like the iconic...
Yeah.
Level, like that's the one that even if you've never really played Outrun, if you've ever come across it anywhere,
it's the second stage once you go left.
Yeah, once you've probably seen that, you know, somewhere, because it's just although the cliffside one too is pretty. The cliffside one is pretty intense. Those two areas in particular, because you're hemmed in on both sides a lot of the time by rock, yep. And it's just like, ugh. But yeah, going back to the Sega Saturn version too. One of the other things, and I'm not sure where I saw this. I want to say it might have been GameSack on YouTube. But one of the interesting things that I've seen said about it is that it's quote-unquote better than the arcade version, because, A, there's a 60 frame per second mode that you can unlock. The arcade version, I believe, only runs at 30. Well, anyway, the game itself runs at 30 on the Saturn. But you can unlock a 60 frame version. And I remember watching a breakdown, like a frame-by-frame breakdown of it, and the roadside objects actually update twice as fast as the road itself that mode.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah.
Got to use those, you know, the 48 processors that are inside a Sega Saturn to the limits.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense. No, you're right. Basically, on the arcade hardware, just to kind of clarify, the frame rate is locked at 30 on the hardware. You can overclock the hardware
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So if you really want to go nuts and destroy your board, you can go do that. But yeah, like Greg was saying, you can do 60 frames per second on Sega Asia's version. And they carried that over to the 3DS release as well. So, man, we haven't even talked about playing the game. So I want to talk about playing the game a little bit because I played a ton of this game. Like I mentioned, I've owned multiple arcade machines. I've always been crazy about keeping it at the default difficulty and time limit and all that stuff. So I never beat it on an arcade machine. all I had to do is open up that damn back door and change the difficulty and the time limit through a couple dip switches. But I never did it. And it took to me getting the Sega Saturn version to then just, you know, going into the options and modifying time limit. And it's really the time limit. I found that, you know, the difficulty with the cars wasn't too crazy. It's more just like the time limit because I can weave pretty well. It's more just I always end up hitting the sides. But as you play more and more Outrun, you start to figure out a couple little things. Like when I had the arcade machine, I haven't even looked at my notes this whole episode. That's how like pumped I am for this episode. So when I owned the arcade machine, if you are getting like really close to hitting something, like you can kind of cheat by downshifting real fast, going back to like 180 kilometers per hour, and then you can jack it back up to high gear and almost get back to your original speed instantaneously while still missing that other car, because I never like to brake. I'm always like, yeah, we gotta go fast like Sonic. So
that was the one component of your arcade machine that wasn't worn out. Was
no,
the brake.
I never used the brake. And, also, I always shut off the rumble in the steering wheel too, because it was so loud. It's so loud, and I have neighbors. Like I have people that live above me, and even in my other apartment, I had people that lived above me and next to me. So I could never really keep that on. I just shook and made too much noise. But downshifting is always a quick way to get out of a bad situation. You maneuver real quick, then you upshift super fast, and I really appreciate it on like the 3DS, where you can just keep shift on one, you know, trigger and not have to worry about, oh, wait, is upshift L and R, like which one's which? But the tactile sense of, you know, starting in low and keeping your right hand on the shift gear and then going into high gear, like that is, that tactile feel is something that you can just not mimic in a home version. But anyways, like that, when I got that Sega Ages version, and Greg, I don't know if you remember, but I bought like 16 Sega Saturn games like at this time period when I went to Japan. So I came back with a stack of stuff, and the first thing that I did is I sat down and I played through four routes. I did four different routes, so I got four different finishes, and there's five finishes. And that is when I realized that at the end of every single stage, it's a completely different crowd there.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Because you never finished it on the...
Exactly. So, right. And it's like weird. Like even one of them, you're kind of, I guess it's like in a desert or whatever, but there's like Native Americans there. Like,
and camels. Lots of camels.
Well, yeah, I couldn't tell if it was like Egypt or Native Americans. Like the graphic fidelity of 1986 arcade hardware was not really super good. But I thought that was just awesome. And I almost kind of like didn't understand when I passed that final goal, because it takes control over from you and it just like stops. I'm like, oh, am I resting before I go into the next one? But no, it's really like, it's like a 5-minute game. If you're good enough at it, you get done in 5 minutes.
Yeah. No, and those endings are great. That's one of the things I've always loved about, and I don't know if I ever remember seeing any of those in the arcade. I doubt I ever finished the game in the arcade, but I would have finished it on the Mega Drive. Well, I have finished it on the Mega Drive a bunch of times, and I've always loved those different endings because they're all, some of them are kind of basic where, you know, you just come out and you get a trophy and everything, but it always has something to do with your girlfriend too, there's just some funny stuff, like a crowd coming in and tossing you up in the air and catching you and everything until the beautiful woman walks in, and then they all see the woman drop you, and or the trophy gets given to your girlfriend or something like that. They're cute little vignettes at the end.
And also, through just replaying it this week, I think I just realized why I really love this game, and it's, I think it's because it's like the Fast and Furious game that I've always wanted. Because they're traveling like throughout the, I mean, really, in about 5 minutes, you get to travel the globe. You know what I'm saying? You literally get to go coast to coast, continent to continent, but just without ever taking your foot off the gas which is really weird because that's like basically what the Fast and Furious movies are. They're just like going from continent to continent, like country to country, and then dropping the cars out of a plane and then, you know, going after it. And it's basically the guy on the left is Dom and, you know, the woman is Letty, except with blonde hair instead of brunette. But that's all right.
That is a bizarre description, but okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's just because, like I said, I'm like sitting down on my couch and then right to the left of me, Tokyo Drift and Fast 6 posters. Also, we can be honest, like the difficulty really ramps up in how the game curves and the amount of hills and then the traffic, where the traffic will just like, you'll have like three cars going across the lane and there's just nowhere for you to go. So that's when you get to do that quick downshift. Again, pro tip, seriously, use that quick downshift if you're playing on the 3DS to maneuver some of that stuff. And, what else did I write down? I mean, it's just a lot of stuff. Like, let's talk about the 3DS version for a second, because I mean, you talked about it a little bit before, but the amount of options and customization that that version gives you is really outstanding. It goes way above and beyond the Sega Ages version, from adjusting difficulty to the time, to, you know, how you want to set up the buttons on the game for like acceleration and brake and upshift and downshift. You can have, you know, have independent for up and down. You can even modify the look of the, like what the screen will look like to make it more of like a tube television look.
Yep.
And you can have like a bezel that goes around it, and then you can have like the machine move when you get hit. So you can kind of mimic the actual physical arcade hardware as much as you want. You can even, modify like the EQ of the sound, and you can obviously, change stuff for the soundtrack and listen to the tracks independently in the options. So you can do a ton of stuff. It's just a really, it's a love letter. It's a loving, you know, version of that game that is, you know, it's why I will continue to buy this stuff, even though I hate buying digital stuff from Nintendo stores.
Yeah. I mean, you can't go wrong with the other version. Obviously more people are going to have a 3DS, but, yeah,
I don't know. Like, if you're listening to this show, you might be surprised.
That's true, actually. Well, I have no issue with people owning Saturns, because the Saturn's one of the greatest systems ever made. But for me playing this week, I mean, I've played even before the 3DS version came out. I play Outrun pretty regularly anyway, because it's just one of my favorite games ever. But one of the things that I love about it is, like, you know, nowadays it's always it's kind of this running joke, like, how we have so many like shooters and stuff like that, and everything's all brown and dark colors and muted, and you know, you sort of this post-apocalyptic sort of art style in a lot of them. and playing Outrun is just like, I love it because it's like a breath of fresh air. Like that's almost exactly the way the game is set up, because of course when you start, the very first level that you have to run in is like the beachside, you know, with that great music and this just a wonderful color palette. Like, the game is really bright and colorful, which is one of the things I love about it. It's such a throwback to the mid-80s, really, where, you know, like, you just have these beautiful blue skies, and even as you get into these different areas, like, the color palette changes, but it always remains really vibrant. You know, like, the color, the sky will go from, like, really bright blue to really deep red for, like, a sunset or something like that, or you even get cloud cover, but that mixed with the music being so upbeat, I'm really happy when I play Outrun.
It's just
a happy game.
It's something that's missing in a lot of games today, where, like, the last episode that we recorded, like, how surprised I was when I booted up Klonoa, and immediately I just felt better just because of the tone of the game.
The tone, exactly, and that's the key thing. And you're talking about like the fact that it's a convertible you're driving, and you know, you're driving along, and your girlfriend's in there with you.
Everybody wants that. They want to be in a Ferrari.
Yeah,
it's a 1986. Hair blowing. Like, look at Ferris Bueller. Like, it's Ferris Bueller's day off. The game.
Even when you crash, it's awesome. You know, it looks painful, but you just get up again. Or if you spin out and your girlfriend like gives you the business, it's I don't know. It's just great. It's a happy game.
Have you played a lot of Turbo Outrun?
I have never played Turbo Outrun.
Okay, because Turbo Outrun kind of has like a story where I believe you're the same characters, but now you are racing across the country against this other dude with his girlfriend. So you're basically like competing against this guy that's like trying to show off. to his girlfriend. So like, you'll start the race and he'll like screech out, like he'll, you know, screech his tires and he'll go out way far ahead of you, and you get to try to catch up to him and beat him. So you're not just like going up against the time, you're going up against someone else.
Is he in the Ferrari and you're in the Supra? Is that?
I believe you're both in Ferraris.
Okay. I was just trying to give you another Fast and Furious opening there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with my Fast and Furious stuff is I don't really care about cars at all. Maybe except for little Bow Wow's Hulk.
Oh, God.
In Tokyo Drift. But yeah, I mean, and actually Turbo Outrun, that version on the Mega Drive or in the Sega Genesis is actually not that bad. It's actually pretty good.
Really? Okay. I've never played it. I played like 2019 or whatever that one was.
That's garbage.
Awful.
That's garbage.
That is an awful game.
Don't touch that game. Turbo Outrun was actually, you know, developed by Yu Suzuki. So you can put your money in that. And it's dirt cheap on the Genesis if you want to pick it up.
What you're describing though is kind of similar to what they ended up doing with Outrun 2.
It is. And yeah, in 2006. Exactly.
Yeah, so like, because that's the same thing. Like, they added Rivals, which obviously the genesis of that was Turbo Outrun. But you know, where there's everybody's driving Ferraris and you're going through traffic as usual, but then you also have other racers out there with you, which is pretty cool.
And Turbo Outrun really has much more of a like Space Harrier look to it, like much bigger sprites, and it is. I mean, the big difference is that there's a linear course. You're not choosing to go left and right. It's basically like your Cannonball Run, you know, start in California, you finish in, you know, New York City or whatever. Actually, it's the other way around. You start in
New York City.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, that's Turbo Outrun. It's really cool. It has like almost a, like an Excite Bike turbo mechanic to it where you can overheat. It's not that bad. It's just the music is not super good. So,
well, I mean, how are you ever going to live up to it, though? I mean, the tracks in Outrun are iconic. You know, like, how do you better that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's more crazy that Turbo Outrun runs on the same hardware as Outrun. It runs on the same board.
Huh.
Or maybe the top board, the A board's different. Maybe, okay, there's, I don't know. I haven't looked at an Outrun arcade machine in a long time. But, you know, it's pretty much the same hardware. It might be just like, sometimes they'll have A and B boards and you'll like sit the A board on top of a B board. So that might have been what's different, but anyways, that's Outrun. 3DS version is incredible. The 3D is just great. It has incredible sense of speed, but like you said, if you want to pick up this game, check it out on the Sega Ages version on the Sega Saturn. Check it out on the 3DS. Pretty much avoid the Genesis version, and then if you want a really cool version, go check it out on the PC Engine and the Turbo Graphics. Does that sound about right?
Sounds about right.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're going to do some quick news and discussion stuff and some Q&A from Twitter. Stick around. We'll be right back. Right, this is the part of the show that really has no real format, and the show is basically over. This is where we're just going to talk about some retro stuff real quick. We got some tweets that were sent in and also just some general stuff that is going on that we wanted to talk about. So let's go into a couple tweets real quick. We will go with this one from Todovsky. What would you want out of a sequel if one was ever made? Do you prefer the original or the sequel to Outrun? So I'm guessing he's talking Outrun versus Turbo Outrun, which would be the real sequel. I don't know. What would you want if they did like an Xbox One PS4 version?
I really would just be happy with a high-res version of what we got with Outrun 2. Outrun 2 is a fantastic game.
I wish it was readily available on like PSN.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have that as a downloadable.
It's not even downloadable on the PSP, like no. Vita.
And I mean, the Vita, the PSP version is really nice too, but the Xbox version was exceptionally pretty.
I have a PSP version on the shelf. So
nice. Yeah, me too.
It's a good game. It's just, I don't know. I don't have love for it, I guess. I just got to really sit down and play it. But, you know, when's the last time you turned on a PSP?
Exactly.
If they could put it on a Vita, I would rather do that. But the Vita is not getting a lot of support in terms of the PSP games being functional on that thing, even though they're completely capable. It's contract and all that other stuff.
Well, I mean, the other problem that you've got, obviously, with Outrun is the Ferrari license, right? I mean, you can't just sell it. You need to be licensed.
Well, they're selling the 3DS game. Sega could do it if they wanted to.
I'm curious about that.
But I mean, they don't make games anymore, so.
That's true.
So, yeah, we mentioned the Turbo Outrun Outrun thing. Other sequels, like, yeah, like we said, Outrun 2019, terrible.
Stay away.
What
about Outrunners?
Yeah, it's our great arcade game.
Is it? I've never played it.
There are two Outrunners machines local to me that are available for sale.
Really?
That okay. I know of, yes. They are side by side, sit down arcade cabinets, and it's not like San Francisco Rush, but you're racing against the person next to you. You have the ability okay. to do that. Outrunners. It's probably if you find an arcade. Maybe if I don't think Disney Quest is still open. If it is,
I don't think it's the same as it was. I was down in Disney in November, and we were gonna go into Disney Quest. We had to pay cover, and we didn't want to spend that much time. But I don't think it's just a big arcade in there anymore.
Probably not. There was lots of like. This was maybe how old am I? This is probably at least like 15 years ago. Last time I was there, but.
When I was there for my honeymoon, so that was like 9 years ago, and it was a big arcade back then, but I think it's changed.
Probably. Yeah, so let's go to another tweet real quick. Like to know if you have any ideas for what would make a good modern remake. I guess that's the same question.
We just, yeah, yeah, we pretty much just did that.
Best version versus favorite version from Jerkface Killa, a perennial Player One podcast emailer. Or Twitter. So I'm going to say my favorite version might be the really cool PC Engine version.
I mean, the best version is easily the Saturn version.
Yeah.
Well,
I'd say it's the 3DS version. It's not the Saturn version.
Maybe I like being able to have it on the screen though, but yeah, I guess if you're really being, if you're sort of taking that out of it, yeah, the best version, the most complete and feature rich version is definitely the 3DS. I have an affinity, even though we said that it's not very good, I have an affinity for the Genesis game.
That makes sense.
Mostly because, you know, that was I spent so much time on that cartridge. That cartridge spent so much time in my Genesis in the 90s. Like, no, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't even the best superscalar port for that system. It was not really a very good port, but it played well enough that I just played it over and over and over and over again.
Let's see. And there was also in the news, like I mentioned before, I was on the Nintendo World Report, and I guess Donkey Kong 64 made it out this week. And the discussion that we, I guess we were having, and I didn't realize he's like super young. He's like 21, I guess. So he kind of missed out on it. And I missed out on it because I had a Sega Dreamcast in 2000. I was done with Nintendo 64. I was playing NFL 2K. I was playing NBA 2K. And I was playing Resident Evil Code Veronica, which is the most beautiful game that was out on anything at the time. So maybe I, hopefully this is my big concern. I mentioned it on that show, so I apologize if you listen to that and you're listening to this, but Nintendo is, has a track record for saying, hey, check out the, you know, we're doing Wii Virtual Console now. So look at, we got three great Wii games and that's it. So we're done.
Yeah. It's too bad.
Think about all those Wii games that you would love to have on, like, think about like Klonoa on the Wii, which is now super expensive and hard to find. Mm-hmm. You know, I would maybe even take a look at that if it was $10 or even $20 versus the one on the PS1. But it's a real shame how they just have a short attention span when it comes to the virtual console. And it will come in spurts, like just randomly Donkey Kong Land 1 through 3 will pop up, and then you'll have no Game Boy games for a while. With Nintendo 64, I'm afraid they're going to do these three games, and then we're not going to hear about any other Nintendo 64 games for a long time. They just need to – they don't have to prioritize it. It's not going to sell consoles, but I would be surprised if they can't just make enough money back and just have a value add to the console to make it even easier for people to jump in.
I wish they'd gone N64 on the 3DS.
Dude, I wish, this is another thing we talked in the show, they have a bunch of Game Boy Advance games that are coming out, and you still have to play those on a big-ass TV.
Yeah, I don't understand the decisions they're making. I mean, I like that they make that stuff available, like on the big console, but I don't understand the system separation between the two. Like, I'd kill to have a good version of Mario 64 on my 3DS.
You do. It's called Super Mario 64.
No, that's not a good version.
Yeah, it is.
Ugh.
It doesn't look as good, but it's not bad.
Does it use the, can you use the analogs?
Absolutely, yeah.
It
plays great. It plays great on, plays great on 3DS. All right. I can,
because it played terribly on the DS.
Yeah, it plays terrible on the DS. It really plays well on the 3DS. And
okay,
you know, it's just it. Maybe it's
so. Not, how easy is that to get a hold of?
It's like $25. Just find, where, just buy it on eBay.
Why can't I buy it for $5 on virtual console?
It's also a case of where, like Ocarina of Time, it's short print runs. Where Ocarina of Time on the 3DS now goes for like $80.
Yeah, exactly. But either way, my point being is that I just, you know, I don't understand. And then I will say it was funny when Donkey Kong came out. Guillaume, who I think is also a Nintendo World Report,
mm-hmm.
Apparently I don't think he'd ever played it before. And he was like basically on Twitter, like asking what the hell he got himself into. Like, because Donkey Kong 64 for me represents what became of Rare during the N64 days, which was like they started out so strong because they were basically the only other company that was making Nintendo style 3D platformers.
And GoldenEye and Perfect Dark.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about GoldenEye, but the thing is that like their games always were like these stupid sort of super collectathons.
Mm-hmm.
And DK64 is the worst of the bunch because, like, you go into a level and you see all these bananas everywhere that you have to collect, but they're all different colors. And if only certain characters can collect certain bananas, so, like, you just see all, like, these ghost images of all these other bananas that you can't actually pick up.
Oh, that's gross.
It's so terrible. I hated that game.
That's a bummer. I mean, I would like to own more Nintendo 64 games on Virtual Console. They did a pretty good job on the Wii, and I mean, it's obvious. The Wii U gamepad and the Pro Controller are much easier to play Nintendo 64 games on than, you know, having to get a Wiimote and attaching that damn classic controller to the Wiimote and having it hang all over the place. Now we just have better controller options to do all this stuff. So I know it would... Honestly, I just don't know how hard it is to do this stuff. So maybe there's people saying that they've been optimizing some of the games to make them look a little bit better. And to me, when I think of that, it is just literally you're flipping switches in an emulator like you could on a Nintendo 64 emulator for your Mac. Like you can get a Mac N64 emulator and make that stuff look pretty damn good. So I don't know. It's just not worth trying to understand the decisions that Nintendo makes. It's like them introducing a glossy new 3DS that is a fingerprint magnet where they just had a really great matte version for the previous, I don't know, man. Like it's really confusing, and it bums me out. So that's why I just don't think about that stuff. I focus on the fact that Xenoblade Chronicles 3D came out, and I was playing that today, and it just, that game kicks ass.
I caved and I bought it.
Good.
I played about an hour of it.
Good. So it's far. You need to, if you own a new 3DS, you have to pick this up, and hopefully you know it only runs on the new 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
But it is just it looks beautiful. The soundtrack is just amazing. It sucks you right in, and I can't wait to play some more of that game. It is, like, I'm almost holding on to it for my flight to Japan, although the battery is only going to last for 3 hours, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But yeah, great stuff. I mean, Nintendo's still going to do great stuff. I'm looking forward to the next console, and hopefully I'll get to play Zelda before the Wii U is in the coffin. So think about it. I mean, what else is coming out in Wii U this year except Splatoon?
Well, Zelda's not coming out this year.
No, exactly.
Splatoon looks awesome.
You know, I listened to A4 today, and Garnett Lee said the most right thing. He said that should be a $20 downloadable game.
Aww.
Totally right. It's a downloadable multiplayer game. It is not a $60 release. I don't think it's going to sell well.
We'll see.
I bet... Yeah, I don't know, even know what to compare it against. Like, compare it against, I bet it sells less than Bayonetta, too. That's my prediction right there. But
all right,
I saw it. I mean, I saw it at PAX East. Man, it looks fun. It's just like, do you want to, like, if you, me, and like CJ played that game, like, we'd have to play it without being able to talk to each other.
I kind of prefer that, especially if CJ's involved.
But what if I need you to flank the left?
No, I'm serious. You know what? I don't really care about voice chat. I know that I'm supposed to. I don't.
Like, you're not supposed. I'm not saying you have to, but it's just nice to have the option.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, the nice thing is I never have to worry about it. If my kids are playing it, I never have to worry about it.
You don't like being called a retard?
I'll tell you, when we had Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare, my son was really into it. He was 5 at the time, and you know, I didn't even think to turn off voice chat. I didn't even think about it at all, and I didn't realize, you know, I didn't think about the fact that it came through the screen. And man, there's just people scream, because I mean, you don't even need a headset to scream at the game, right? If you had the Kinect, which everybody did at that point. Yeah, it wasn't a good experience.
Do you ever play the Ferrari 355 on the Dreamcast?
Yep.
How awesome was that game?
It was awesome, but it was super hard.
That's almost like a spiritual successor to Outrun, in a sense.
Well, that was definitely, because that was Yu Suzuki as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he has a thing for Ferraris. So, I mean, that was his love letter to Ferrari, basically.
F355 Challenge.
Which came up by Acclaim here. Acclaim released it here.
What? Sega didn't put that out?
No, well, no, because Acclaim had the license. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, no way. Okay.
Yeah, Acclaim had the Ferrari. I'm assuming they had the Ferrari license. There was a reason why Sega couldn't release that game in the U.S.
You're right. It was published in the arcades by Sega,
yep,
and on the PS2 by Sega, but Acclaim
released
it for the Dreamcast. Yeah. No shit.
Yep.
Wow. That is the more you know. Also, there was a lot of other cool stuff that I didn't put in the news segment that I might want to rattle off real quick, like the... the fact that for Outrun, in terms of reception, like a lot of the home ports were really highly regarded, including Commodore version by Commodore User Review, the arcade game, and it's March 87. Or I guess it was just for the arcade game, calling it a, quote, a great game for driving enthusiasts, giving it a 9 out of 10. You know, that's another thing I miss. Adam Sessler giving out scores. A 4 out of 5. That, damn, I miss that. Because he was on Game Over Greggy's show a couple weeks ago, and he was really good. I'm going to miss him doing stuff like that. There was the other couple things. In the January 87 issue of Computer and Video Games, Claire Edgley gave the arcade game a positive review, stating that the low viewpoint of the road and the swaying motion of the car make it a very exciting game to play. Yeah, I don't know. It's just funny. Like the Sinclair version got really good reviews. So I guess maybe the ports on the PC were not that bad. Because Even listen to this. The 8-bit console Sega Master System port released in 87 was also well received. It received a score 9 out of 10 from the October 87 issue of Computer and Video Games, which concluded that Outrun on the Sega has all the thrill power of the arcade version. I don't think so.
Yeah, you got to remember these people are writing these reviews comparing it to other games on those consoles.
And you guys get paid like $500 for a review, right, from the publisher?
Something like that. Actually, it's funny. I'm actually watching a video of the Sinclair, the ZX Spectrum version of the game right now, and that's actually better than I expected, but it's running at about 5 frames a second.
Well, the reception of the 8-bit personal computer ports published by US Gold were generally mixed. Depending on the quality of the conversions, the ZX Spectrum version received positive to average reviews. It received a positive review scores from Your Sinclair. Oh, I love that magazine. I don't know. So, yeah, it's just us rambling because there's not other stuff to talk about.
I think we're officially done.
Yeah. We just recorded 2 days ago, so that's what happens. All right, so that is going to do it. Don't forget a couple things real quick. Mike Micah is – I'm going to be recording something. Actually, you won't even hear this by the time I recorded that, so forget about that. Mike Micah is going to be on the next episode, so that's really cool. And I will be back from Japan after that, so maybe I'll have some stories from Japan. I'm going to try to meet up with the 8-4 guys. I don't think we're going to record anything. I think we're just going to get a slice of pizza.
I think you should hang out and talk about Generation 16.
We could. It's always funny when they mention you on the show and don't bring that up.
I know. It drives me nuts.
You know, and I like it when they talk about instead of Mike, it's always like Mark. On the
well, yeah, Mark does that on purpose.
I know, it's a joke. It's funny.
I love it. I love it. And I will like Mark and John actually do pimp Generation 16 on Twitter a lot, so and can't really complain.
Don't forget Justin Epperson, who also has been on Back in My Play. He was on the Panzer Dragoon episode that was really, really good, and I'll have to get him back on to do some more Sega stuff.
Yeah, he's cool.
So that is that. Patreon.com/backinmyplay to support the show. Really appreciate all the support people give on Patreon. I'm looking into doing some Patreon specific bonuses for people that are willing to support the show with a financial contribution. Means a lot. So also see, look, this is what happens. It's 10:30. I'm like, my brain stops working. Patreon.com/generation16 and /P1podcast to support those various shows. I always love people that love to support great content. So I actually support both of those shows personally myself as well.
You're a good man.
I am. And also, any updates on Generation 16? I know you finished almost finished with the production with the latest one, right?
I'm not almost finished production because, see, this terrible thing happened. The NHL playoffs started. So production's going a little bit slow right now, but I am in the editing phase. I still have some footage to capture, but not of the games, just of some product shots. So yeah, it's probably another couple weeks away. And, of course, anyone who's a patron who supports the show to the tune of $5 or more per episode – of course, gets to see that episode a week before general release.
I do. I just like to watch them on YouTube anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I just wait till you post it on Twitter because I can wait, but you shouldn't. You should do the $5.
That was the worst sales pitch ever.
$5 for like 35, 45 minutes of video is pretty damn good when it's no one else is producing this stuff. If you like old video games, support the production of this content because other people are not doing it.
Thank you.
So that is it. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes as well as the Player One podcast. While you're there, might as well throw up a great review. And like I mentioned in the last episode, thank you so much to everyone that has just sent messages of support, whether it be posting on the website, emails, Twitter, all means a lot. You can hit me up on Twitter at @KevinLarrabee. Greg is at @SEWART. And at Back in My Play. And make sure you're following those because I'm also going to be giving away some. Actually, we can give it away on this show. All right, I'm going to give this away right now. For people that stuck through all that garbage, this is going to be for Mewtwo on the. I'm going to find it real quick. Here it is for the 3DS. So this is a Mewtwo advanced download code for Smash Brothers on the 3DS. I'm going to read it for you right now. It is A080WSY90YRRK8M8. So that is a Mewtwo download for Smash Brothers on the 3DS. That is thanks to Keenan, who is a long, long time listener of the show, and he also sent some kind words when I was taking a break for a little bit. So,
you realize I just downloaded that while we were sitting here, right?
Did you?
No.
Yeah, no. You guys got some.
But
some
it'd be hilarious.
Send you stuff too. So
yeah, we'll be giving away a code on Player One, I believe.
Cool. Well, that's going to do it because this is it's late. I'm rambling, and we finally did Outrun. Next episode is going to be Mike Micah, and then after that will either be Klonoa, or it will be Super Metroid, or it will be Gunstar Heroes. Not a bad lineup.
That's quite a choice.
Not a bad lineup. I'm going to try to. I'm seeing if I can get Georgia Dow back to do some Super Metroid. Because we talked about that, and she is just an awesome, great guest. Greg, you're all right, but Georgia has been, she's crossed the barrier to the FitCast and to Back in My Plays. So you can hear her over there too if you want to go to the FitCast.com. It's listened to about 25,000-30,000 people every week. All right, thank you, Greg, and thank you, everyone else. Until then, here is that Euro mix that I promise from Magical Sound Shower.
Actually, I already played that, so here's some music from Persona 4 Golden.